From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Deal. Today, the Democrats are having a moment in President Trump's latest deal-making with Democratic leadership. He says he'll give up his most central campaign promise, at least for now, saying, quote, "the wall will come later." And Senator Bernie Sanders on how he's using this moment. It's Friday, September 15th. Glenn, I feel like there's been a ton of back and forth the past 36 hours. So let's roll the clock back. What happened on Wednesday night?
What happened is round two of the Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi rapprochement with President Trump. They were invited over to discuss a series of legislative issues, and they wound up, as predicted, talking about immigration, DACA, and the wall.
And this meeting happened where?
This meeting happened in one of the rooms in the White House residence. President Trump ordered in Chinese.
You can do that as president?
I think you can order in anything you want as president. I think the one thing you can't apparently order in as president is funding for a border wall with Mexico. That, I think, is something you can't do. But apparently the president ate crispy – I may be getting this wrong. I've never heard of this, and I'm a Brooklyn kid and a longtime orderer-inner of Chinese food. Crispy – sweet, crispy beef.
Hmm.
And Chuck Schumer, who will eat anything in a Chinese restaurant. I don't know exactly. My reporting has not yet yielded what he would order. But also on the menu, as they say, was a proposal by – kind of a joint proposal by Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, the House Minority Leader and former Speaker, to get rid of this issue of potentially deporting these 800,000 Dreamers, mm-hmm. and also beef up, as a sop for Republicans, funding for border security and surveillance. But – pointedly, no funding this go-around for the wall. Senator Schumer and Congresswoman Pelosi, but mostly Schumer, laid out the contours of a deal, saying that a wall funding could not be part of it. Democrats could not support that.
So after this dinner ends and everyone leaves, what happens right after?
Well, what happens right before the dinner ended is Schumer, the president, and Pelosi talked about what they were going to talk about. And it's my understanding that Schumer let the president know that he was going to go out there and talk about
– fascinating.
That he had reached some sort of an agreement. Now, whether or not they'd use the word deal, I don't know. That later came into dispute. But they all knew what the other was going to do. That's what my sources tell me. And then they went out, and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi essentially said that they had a deal with the president. Right after that, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders tweeted out that, no, in fact, they didn't have a deal. And the president, over the course of the last 24 hours, has given any number of answers.
This morning, the president tweeted no deal was made last night on DACA. Massive border security would have to be agreed to in exchange for consent.
This morning, the president said this.
Well, we're working on a plan subject to getting massive border control. We're working on a plan for DACA.
My consensus from talking with people in the West Wing and talking with people up on the Hill is there is a framework for an agreement, broad framework for an agreement. And the president, I think, spent a good part of Thursday getting people used to the notion that he wasn't going to get the wall this year.
The wall will come later. We're right now renovating large sections of wall, massive sections, making it brand new. We're doing a lot of renovation. We're building four different samples of the wall to see which one we're going to choose. And the wall is going to be built. It'll be funded a little bit later.
So, Glenn, I want to run this by you because personally, this feels entirely new to me as a former political reporter. I guess I can call myself that now. You walk out of a private meeting with the president and you announce what happened. And my theory of what's going on here is that these two people think that unless you put a stake in the ground within seconds of actually having a discussion with the president, that he may try to change the terms of it. Is that what they're doing, like kind of governing by
Michael,
declaration?
I love that. That if it's not said in front of a camera, it's not a deal. I think that's a fantastic way to look at it. Now, what you have here is maximum transparency in terms of negotiations in which all the major parties and a lot of their staff simply give up the details of the negotiation. But more to your point, the president of the United States doesn't believe something has happened, doesn't believe a deal has been cut unless he sees it on television.
Hmm.
So he has created a coin of the realm, and everyone else is transacting in that coin of the realm. And by the way, Chuck Schumer also believes in that coin of the realm. And, you know, the great legendary line about the most dangerous place in Washington to be is between Chuck Schumer and a camera.
Hmm.
That line predated Donald Trump by a decade, and right, it's just as true for Trump.
So as you alluded to earlier, this was round two of deal-making between President Trump and Democratic congressional leadership. Republicans like Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan were really quick to explain away what happened last week, saying that the press was making too much of it and was kind of buying a line from the Democrats, kind of absorbing their spin of it. But does this meeting this week suggest that there's something to this idea, that Trump is serious about working with Democrats?
Well, I don't know how long-term his seriousness is about working with Democrats, but I'll tell you this. A door has opened. He was in a locked room. He was sort of locked in a room with Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, and somebody opened a door. Now, mind you, who walked in but Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi? But this gives him more options. It gives him more leverage against them. This really is a good way to negotiate, is to create alternative bargaining partners so that you then go back and have greater leverage with the people that you're ultimately going to have to cut a deal with, and that's mm-hmm. the Republicans. So this is smart politics. And Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan are not especially happy about the political dynamic, even if from a policy perspective, they're not really all that opposed to what was being discussed in the dinner on Wednesday.
So how are Republicans that you talked to reacting to this latest act of friendliness between President Trump and the Democrats? Are they finding it harder to dismiss this stuff?
I think they are finding it harder to dismiss because the political realities in Washington point in this direction and have pointed in this direction for a really long time. This is really changing the fundamental dynamic. I think the big question here is, and it seems to be a 50-50 split, is this a momentary bit of deal making, and will they move on to something else and forget about this strategy? Hmm. The other complicating factor in this is, I think President Trump is very apprehensive about a conservative backlash. That is why you are seeing him speaking much more about religious liberty. They're considering a new executive order on religious liberty. And for instance, when he was in Camp David, for the first time that I can recall in the Trump administration, they put out pictures of the president engaged in prayer with the cabinet. What that tells me is he is trying to hedge his bets with the right, particularly the religious right, in order to get them used to the notion that he might be moving a little bit towards bipartisan deal making and deferring the wall.
So what you're saying is President Trump can make policy deals that are actually not all that conservative, perhaps even favored by Democrats, so long as he keeps talking the conservative talk.
When you start moving towards this issue of making deals with Democrats and broadening out your appeal, really cutting yourself off from your supply base of conservative Republicans, what you then have to fall back on is coming up with an argument that allows you to kind of unite a coalition. So what we're about to find out is whether or not Donald Trump has the skills to form messages, to use the presidency to persuade people to accept a result that isn't absolute in one direction.
I just want to give you an example of this because I find it fascinating. The transgender ban in the military, is that a case of just kind of talking the talk, even though it doesn't seem like he's going to be doing a whole lot about it in the military?
Look, with the exception of immigration and the travel ban in particular, he's backtracked on almost every significant promise. I mean, on the transgender ban, General Mattis, who's the Secretary of Defense, and other military leaders have been slow walking this.
Right.
So it seems like the pattern is the president makes a blustery statement, and then he defers to people on the granularity of these policies. And that was a trend that long predated his flirtation with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer.
I'm interested in what this flirtation means for Democrats in Congress more broadly, like the fact that Bernie Sanders and other Democratic senators are suddenly pushing for single-payer health care, which seems so on the party margins. Are these Democrats who feel disillusioned that their leadership is willing to make deals with this president, and so that encourages them to double down on these unquestionably Democratic positions to reinforce their idea of the party identity?
The real crossroads for Democrats comes if this Pelosi-Schumer strategy actually works and Donald Trump is receptive to bigger deals, because then they aren't just dealing around the margins here. You know, if you start getting into tax reform and infrastructure and Democrats become stakeholders, they start to own Donald Trump's policies. Mm. And what you're seeing is a lot of, I think, disquiet on the left from the Bernie Sanders contingent about doing any business whatsoever with the president. I mean, there is a strong, strong, powerful movement within the Democratic Party to simply resist Trump. I think right now Pelosi and Schumer are delighted that they're in the game. They can get this and that. They can exert influence. They feel that it is a win-win situation. But if the president is really serious and true to his word about involving them in things, there are risks that they pose, and it could split the Democratic Party in half.
Hmm. Glenn Thrush, thank you very much.
Great talking to you.
When we come back, we ask Senator Bernie Sanders about this directly. We'll be right back. On Thursday afternoon, I called Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good. Senator Sanders, thank you so much for coming on The Daily.
My pleasure.
To ask him whether he'd be willing to make deals with the president.
Well, it depends. Look, I happen to think that this president is the most destructive president in the modern history of this country. And I think it's not only that his policies want to give huge tax breaks to the rich and cut programs for working families, that he doesn't even believe in the reality of climate change. But what really gets to me is this is a guy, for the first time in the modern history of this country, who really wants to divide us up, playing on the worst instincts of the American people in terms of race, sexual orientation, national origin, religion. And that's what he's trying to do. And that is unforgivable. That's not what a president should do, to divide us up and try to foment discrimination and hatred. But having said that, he's the president, and if he wants to help us lower the cost of prescription drugs, he wants to rebuild infrastructure, yeah, it's a good thing for the American people, and I think we should do that.
But you're not troubled philosophically by working with the president?
I'm a senator, and I have an obligation to the people of Vermont, the people of America, to get work done. You know, I work with very, very conservative Republicans in the Senate, and we work with them in the House, and if it's possible to get something done on behalf of the American people, let's do it.
What would you most like to work with President Trump on right now?
You know, it turns out that much of what Trump said during his campaign turned out to be lies. But during his campaign, he said, we're going to lower the cost of prescription drugs. Pharmaceutical industry is doing enormous damage to America. Well, it is true. Pharmaceutical industry is incredibly greedy. One out of five people under 65 in this country cannot afford the medicine that the industry charges people. If he wants to work with us on that issue, I think that would be very, very important for the American people.
Okay, so with all that in mind, I want to talk about single-payer health care because I'm really struck by the fact that we're even talking about this at all right now. It's such a progressive idea that President Obama felt that he had to walk away from it in order to get the Affordable Care Act passed. And now we're at a place where Republicans came very close to repealing the Affordable Care Act, as you know. So how is it that single payer is even under discussion right now in Washington?
Good. Well, that's a good question. And I think the answer is that the American people understand that the Affordable Care Act has done some very, very good things. Let's not minimize the reality that we added health insurance. We provided health insurance to 20 million Americans who previously did not have that. That's no small thing. And let's not forget that we did away with this obscenity called pre-existing conditions, a really almost, you know, beyond belief provision that the insurance companies had. That's gone. And a number of other benefits were developed as a result of the ACA. But what I think the American people now understand that the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, did not go far enough in the sense that we have 28 million people still uninsured, even more who are underinsured with high deductibles and high copayments, and that the cost of health care is going up all over this country. Now, the Republicans said in response, well, the Affordable Care Act is not working. Our solution is to throw 23 million people off of health insurance and to give huge tax breaks to the rich and large corporations. And the American people said, that is about the dumbest thing that anyone could do. And I don't know that there's any legislation in modern history that has had less support than that particularly stupid piece of legislation. So the American people are now in a position of saying, okay, Affordable Care Act did some good. Republicans' proposal is totally crazy. Where do we go from here? And the logical answer is toward a Medicare for All single-payer program. Why? Because Medicare today, which what we have had in this country for 52 years, is a program that is very popular, that works quite well, needs to be improved, but it works quite well for senior citizens. Provides health care through a single-payer system to all people in this country 65 years of age or older. Now, today, the United States of America is the only, and people don't know this, we are the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to all people. And I think it's time that we end that, and we do that most efficiently and easily by expanding Medicare to all.
So let me just repeat back to you my understanding of your bill and tell me if I'm getting any of this wrong. You want to expand Medicare, which is now a program for those 65 and older and a few young people who are disabled, to all Americans to make it their primary health care program.
That's correct. Over a four-year period, that is correct.
And it sounds like you believe that the American people are ready for such a program. But how in this political climate, regardless of how the American people may or may not feel, could legislation like what you just introduced possibly get through?
Well, it will get – I'm not here to tell you that I think that under Donald Trump, who just sent out a tweet, I guess, a few minutes ago attacking it.
Yes, he did. He called it a curse.
A curse. Well, I will tell you, and this is – we tweeted back. And what we tweeted back to say is, Mr. President, what the real curse is your support of legislation that would throw 23 million people off of health insurance and give tax breaks to the rich. That's the curse. Providing health care to all people is not a curse.
By the way, I apologize for distracting you, which Twitter does. How in this political climate could legislation like this get through?
And the answer is it's not. I'm not here to tell you or to tell anybody
that's honest.
Under Trump or Mitch McConnell or Paul Ryan, these guys want to throw tens of millions of people off of health insurance. They don't want to provide health care to all people.
So why introduce it now? And why are so many prominent Democrats on board with you?
I will tell you why. Because you got to start somewhere. And what we are seeing in America today is a whole lot of grassroots activism in a number of areas. For example, you could have asked me that same question and said, Bernie, why are you supporting a $15 an hour minimum wage a few years ago? That's crazy. It's not going to pass in the United States Congress, and that's true. But you know what? Millions of people are already benefiting from the effort to raise the minimum wage.
In cities across the country.
All across the country. You got to start someplace.
Is your party also becoming just fundamentally a bit more liberal? We used to talk about during the campaign whether this was the party of Bernie Sanders or the party of Hillary Clinton, and maybe it's becoming a bit more the party of Bernie Sanders.
Well, I think what we are understanding is, you know, when the Democratic Party has lost the House, the Senate, the White House, two-thirds of the governor's chairs, and 1,000 legislative seats in state houses all across the country. You know what? You got to be a moron not to begin to rethink what you're doing, because what the Democratic leadership has been doing clearly, by definition, has failed. And I think the failure lies that the Democratic Party has become too enamored with wealthy people, with large corporations, and have kind of moved away from the working class of this country, which for decades under Roosevelt, under Truman, under Kennedy, was what made the Democratic Party strong and successful. And I think there is a growing understanding of that.
I guess it comes back to this idea from the election that a sizable group of people who supported you in the primary turned to President Trump in the general election rather than Hillary Clinton because, as you say, they had a larger set of anxieties and problems with the system.
Well, I don't know all about that. I mean, in every election, you know, it's just because somebody votes for me does not mean to say they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton. That's never been the case. My understanding is something like 24% of the people who voted for Hillary Clinton in 2008, ended up voting for John McCain for president. You know, those things happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I think what is happening is that all across this country, you're seeing working class people who are asking why it is they're working longer hours for low wages, why almost all 52% of all new income goes to the top 1%. Why can't their kids afford to go to college? Why can't they afford health care? Those are the questions that the working people in this country are asking, and Democrats better have some good answers to those questions.
And did President Trump do a better job of reflecting those anxieties, you think, than...
I think in many ways he did.
The Democrats? Even you?
Right. I mean, let's... Than me? Well, no, I don't think he did better than me. But the point is, he lied, and it's very easy to campaign on a base of lies, to say, I'm going to take on the establishment. And then after you're elected, you appoint more billionaires to your administration than any president in American history. So when you lie, it's pretty easy to say whatever you want to say. And he did a lot of lying during the campaign. But what point now is not to look backwards, it's to look forward. There is a lot of pain in America. And we are not going to go forward as a Democratic Party or as a nation unless we acknowledge that and we acknowledge the obscenity, in my view, of so few having so much and so many having so little. The distribution, the inequities in terms of distribution of wealth and income in this country is literally beyond comprehension. It is unacceptable. And the Democratic Party is going to have to deal with those issues.
Senator, I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Earlier this week, as Sanders and other Democratic senators gathered to rally around the single-payer health care plan, a group of conservative Republican senators, led by Lindsey Graham, came forward with their own health care plan, a last-ditch effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Factions within both parties are trying to move beyond the Affordable Care Act, but moving in radically different directions. Here's what else you need to know today. North Korea tested another intercontinental ballistic missile on Thursday, the first since the United Nations imposed its most severe economic sanctions yet, intended to dissuade the country from developing its nuclear weapons program. The missile traveled over northern Japan, where air raid sirens alerted residents to take shelter. And
T-minus 10. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and liftoff of the Cassini spacecraft.
20 years ago, NASA launched the Cassini spacecraft.
We have cleared the tower, and the Cassini spacecraft is on its way to Saturn.
During its 293 trips around Saturn's orbit, Cassini captured detailed images of the planet's rings and moons, liquid methane lakes, and an atmosphere that turns blue in winter. And it discovered an underground ocean that may be capable of hosting alien life. But now Cassini is running out of gas, and on Friday, NASA will send it hurtling into Saturn's atmosphere, where it will incinerate within minutes. The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, Annie Brown, Andy Mills, and Christopher Worth. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Brad Fisher is our technical manager. Our theme music is by Jim Bunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Peter Sale, Sam Dolnick, Michaela Bouchard, and Malachi Brown. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you Monday.